We know that it is busy times of the year. Nonetheless, now that you are here, we are going to cover the ground that we wanted to cover in terms of the input of the political leadership of the department regarding the bill. I've already accredited your entourage as well as members representing the ministries, honorable members, and the member from Eastern Cape, that is chairperson of Human Settlements. We are very happy that you have been able to join us. Thank you for coming. Let us get started with the business of the day, Deputy Minister. The purpose of the meeting is that you are going to get briefed by the department regarding the Property Practitioners Bill, which I believe is a Section 76 bill, and it requires the input of the provinces. There are apologies by the chairperson. Mrs. Dlamini is not able to make it to the meeting because they are having a study session at VET. They are registered with VET and they are furthering their studies. So I am sending in for her in that regard. We also have an apology from Honorable Stock. We also have a formal apology from Honorable Ngwenya. I hope I'm right. Honorable Stock and Honorable Ngwenya. One which would take it that maybe other members are coming whose apologies have not been recorded. Honorable Whip?
No, thank you, Chair. I want to submit the apology of Honorable Samka. She called me yesterday. She has a bereavement in the bend. Her cousin was burnt in a house. So she won't be here for the whole week.
Okay. Oh, that's bad. That is very sad news. Let us get started with the business of the day, Honorable Minister. We'll have your political input. And then thereafter, we'll have a presentation by one of your officials, the DDG, appointed to represent the DG. By the way, there is also an apology of the DG, of the DG. He is with the minister, made to understand. So we would go in that fashion. We then hand over to you, dear.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I just want to greet everybody that is here in this new year. And we hope that at the end of the day we'll be able to make sure that we meet our mandate in the short space of time that we have at our disposal. Chairperson, the bill before the Select Committee, fortunately it was already coming from the National Assembly. So it is about the issue of the paradigm shift regarding the estate agency and the estate agent to align themselves with the new pieces of legislation in terms of the new legislation that we have as the Department of Human Settlements. But it is also about making it a point that at the end of the day, it aligns itself with the market conditions, because the market conditions dictate otherwise as we speak. At the moment, there's lots of disparities as far as the legislation is concerned. So this bill is long overdue as far as we are concerned. We wanted to have it long ago, but we are happy that now it's already at this point where it's at the NCOP level, so that it can deal with the disparities, particularly in terms of participation and representation in the property market. You remember, Human Settlements at the beginning was not involved in the property market. It was only involved in the low-cost housing, the area of involvement. And the property market were all in the DTI. With the alignment and the movement towards Human Settlements, we needed to respond to the entire property market. And this particular legislation before us, it wants the alignment, therefore, of the pieces of legislation that helps the issue of the property market to align itself with industry in general, with the building industry in general, particularly as far as the bonds are concerned, especially as far as the different loans that people have, bridging finance and everything else. You need a legislation that is able to respond to that, because even the funders out there, they are waiting this legislation, because it will help them in doing their work properly, because we believe that the current legislation is archaic and out of sync with the democratic dispensation. So that is why this one wants to update the property market. When the official is going to give the presentation, it will help us understand exactly what we mean by that in detail, because we want at the end of the day to leave this particular August House with an understanding that when we pass that legislation in the chamber, we will be confident that we are in the right direction. And we are happy that the first legislation that is before you is our legislation. So we are excited and we await your input going forward. And I will engage with the rest of the committee as soon as there are issues that arise that need a kind of discussion that we have. But so far, I want to say we are happy to be here. And we allow our presenters to do the presentation. And I just want to say today, it has been a difficult day today because the minister was meant to be here, because he was assigned to be here today, but we have IMC. The IMC had to be attended to by minister and the director general. And we have the team that is here with us to ensure that you also, this arm of government, this arm of terms of legislation, you do have the attention you deserve. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DM. We will then hand over to the DG, to actually, or the one representing the DG, to take us through the presentation. This is just the first briefing. We all understand that there is process. There are processes. It's not the last engagement on it. We'll be converging from time to time as the process may require us to do so, and also look at the input of the provinces insofar as what you are going to present to us is concerned. We will then hand over, but as I'm hearing from the GM, the crux is the transformation of the property industry. That is the crux of the matter. And allowing those that have been excluded to be included as well, to be a player in the industry. I will then hand over to you, the DG.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, DM, thank you for that. Just compliments from the department and the DG for the new year and all the best. Chair, I am with Mr. Thulani Kambule, who is the Director for Legislation, Mr. Kwezi Ngwenya, who is the Chief Director responsible for legal in the department, Mr. Amadi Vaura, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for policy, and Mr. Tolani Tundu, who is the Chief Director responsible for communications. Chair, the presentation will be done by Mr. Ngwenya, who has championed this process, and particularly throughout the process. Chair, just to amplify and just provide some statistics, and these are there, Amadi will Mr. Vara will also add as may be required, not only here, but in future briefings if required through yourself, DM. The property sector value is approximately 7 trillion. And figures, depending on where those figures are, that only 5% of that is in relation to held by or owned by black South Africans, and that would be Indian, African, and coloured. And particularly, Chair, I think if you look at that, that then translates into a requirement that says there needs to be a transformation. And particularly so that post-1994, in the 25 years that we have had democracy, a large percentage of what we have done as a department has contributed to that 7 trillion. And at last count, that was about 1.4 trillion rand is contributed to by the subsidized sector. I think it's also important to note that post-1994, the growth in the property sector has approximately been 1,300%. So it's important to note that post-democracy there's been a huge and there's been a substantial amount of positive growth, irrespective of the fact that we've gone through downturns and we might through. But the net reality is that we have prospered in relation to growth of the property sector. Chair, in relation to that, and I think in the preamble bill it indicates that Mr. Ngwenya will take us through that. Chair, I think it's just also important for the department to note, and we've the DG has indicated through the minister that the department, the team that is here, remains at your disposal provincially to support in the presentations and the public hearings that will take place. I think there is one that is scheduled on the 1st in Mpumalanga, and Mr. Ngwenya and myself will be in attendance. And then there's also one that we've received from the Eastern Cape that is for the 5th. We remain in your hands, Chair, in relation to members' requests for support and assistance from the department in relation to those hearings, as well as briefings as may be required. Chair, with your permission, I'll ask Mr. Ngwenya to perhaps take us through the presentation.
I've been informed that KZN is on the 2nd. It's on the 5th of February. If we could get some kind of support as well.
We'll at the seniority is that it'll either be myself, Mr. Ngwenya, or Mr. Vara.
Okay.
So on the 5th, for example, there's the Eastern Cape and KZN, so between myself and Mr. Ngwenya. But we will be there, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks to Honourable Members. Honourable Chair, I'll go straight to slide number 6 because the Honourable DM has already indicated and spoke about certain important, you know, historical imperatives in relation actually, you know, to the bill. Chairperson, as you may be aware that the real object of this particular bill is to transform the property market by ensuring that it is reflected of the South African demographics. Honourable Chair, I think Honourable Members, it's quite important and imperative for you to note that in here we are dealing with a piece of legislation which is 1976, which was never actually, you know, amended, which was never actually, you know, repealed. We are doing this particular piece of legislation to date. That is why this piece of legislation is critical, is very important, you know, for us actually to deal with this piece of legislation. So the 1976 piece of legislation is quite important that we need actually, you know, to deal with it so that it can deal with the demographics of this republic. Like the Honourable DMF indicated, if you talk about the property market and the property size and the participation of the private disadvantage, Chairperson, I can tell you that it does not reflect, you know, confidence. Because if you talk about the 5%, the 5% is about the ownership, which are principals. We talk about 15%, which are estate agents. So we must understand also that we are talking about those particular issues and only in relation to the residential market. We are also talking about the issue that relates to the commercial space. If you talk about the commercial space, Chairperson, is something else that we have to talk about. But I think we'll also demonstrate, you know, in various provinces, you know, in terms of the real and the detailed statistics, in terms of what are the numbers, actually, you know, of the estate agents in the various provinces, what are the principals, what are the number of principals. So I can assure you, Chairperson, that it does not actually really inspire confidence. That is why it is important and critical that this piece of legislation on 76 need to be dealt with as a matter of agency. Chairperson, we are repealing this particular piece of legislation to create an alignment and a synergy with the Constitution and other relevant pieces of legislation. There were a number of pieces of legislation that, you know, that came as a result thereafter, after 1976. We are talking about the Constitution, we are talking about PAJA, we are talking about the Consumer Protection Act, we are talking a number of pieces of legislation that have emanated, which has been very progressive towards making sure to say that the people disadvantaged are allowed and given the opportunity for them to participate in this market. Chairperson, we are also repealing this piece of legislation to enhance the corporate efficiency and to make sure to say that all those who participate in a property market do so actually, you know, with a very clear and a set of, you know, of transformational initiative what we want to do. Chairperson, we are also repealing this piece of legislation of 1976 to embark on a drive to professionalize the real estate industry. Because the real estate industry, Chairperson, in terms of entry into the space, it has always been according or in accordance with the, you know, with the 1976 piece of legislation, which necessarily actually encouraged to say that, look, if you want to become an estate agent, this is the route that you have to follow. You have to register, you have to write all those particular professional examinations and so forth, which in most instances, certain areas of that piece of legislation, in particular those provisions, you know, we've seen to say that it could have been, of course, a hindrance actually, you know, to entrance of a black people actually, you know, to enter into the real estate. Because what we wanted to do is to try to make sure to say that how do we advance the issue that relates to consumer awareness, to make sure to say that we, of course, create the particular kind of an interest, and in particular within the previous disadvantage, within the young people, so that we also actually, you know, drive their particular exercise of making sure that they become exposed, you know, to this sector and to this particular market. So if you go to slide number 7, it talks about the content of the bill in particular. The chapter 1 of the bill, Chair, deals with the definitions, the object, the application, and establishment and the functions of the authority. Because in here we are establishing the property practitioner regulatory authority, which we are moving actually, you know, from the previous one, which was called the Estate Agency Affairs Board. But in here we are coming with a new entity that is going to drive the issues that we intend actually to do and the most imperatives actually of government have set out. Then the bill further, Chairperson, defines what is a property practitioner to include everyone involved in the selling, in purchasing, in letting, in renting, in financing and marketing of the property market. Because remember, Chair, the most critical aspect of this, you know, important piece of, you know, of legislation is to regulate the code of conduct of this estate agent. In the process of doing business, they should not actually, you know, taken advantage, you know, of certain individuals. They need to disclose actually the material conditions of the defects actually of the property that they want to, you know, to let, or they are renting, or they are even selling. So we want to intensify that regulatory aspect of making sure to say that all the estate agents that are going to be licensed through this particular process become professionalized so that they can render and also advance the issue of consumer protection in the space. Because, Chair, as it stands to date, and even the intention that we want to advance is that all those individuals that have suffered any pecuniary loss, like in the process of a transaction, if you are buying a property, you need actually to make sure to say that as and when you recorded the estate agent who have assisted you in that particular deal, if you have suffered any loss or any loss of money in the process, you need actually, you know, to report such kind of an estate agent, you know, to the, you know, estate agency affairs board, and the board will discipline the particular estate agent. And as a result of that, as a consumer as well, you have a recourse that you have to go and claim for those particular monies back that you have suffered as a result of that particular estate agent who have made you to lose certain monies, or he didn't, or they didn't even disclose the defect in the process of selling of that particular house. So you do have a recourse. I think we need to drive this particular process, that our people need to know and understand that there is a recourse. If you have used an estate agent, the benefit is that if that particular estate agent didn't disclose any material defect, and as a result you have to fix the house and suffer all those particular loss, you go to the authority to claim that particular loss that you have suffered. So we need to make sure that people understand, and they understand to say that there is a recourse for them, because in the past it was not even at, you know, advance their particular recourse. Chapter 2, Chair, of the bill provides for the governance and the structure of the property regulatory authority. Chapter 2 as well, Chairperson, provides for the composition, appointment, disqualification, dissolution, termination, management of conflict of interest, code of ethics of estate agents, powers and duties of members of the board and committees of the board. It provides, you know, for those particular mechanisms, for the establishment of the board, also mechanisms for the removal and appointment of those board members. Chapter 3, Chair, on page 8, provide for the bill, you know, chapter 3 of the bill provide for the appointment of the chief executive officer, provide for the staff of the authority, provide for management of conflict of interest with authority, and further provide for delegation and functions and powers of the chief executive officer. Chairperson, chapter 4 and other members provide for the establishment of the property sector transformation fund, exemption in respect of trust accounts, as well as the property research center. Chair, I think this particular chapter is very critical in the sense that, as we have indicated, and as well as the DMF indicated, that the real crux of this particular piece of legislation is to advance transformation. In this particular piece of legislation, Chair, if you can see, to say that there is a chapter itself set aside dealing with transformation of the sector. because in order for us to advance the transformation of the sector, we needed also, you know, to go further than dealing with the policy aspect of it. But we need to legislate and make sure to say that the legislation provide specific mechanism as to how to advance the transformation of the sector. How do we move Chairperson from 5% of ownership to at least 30% or at least 50%. So the legislation itself spell out a clear mechanism and a clear intervention mechanism that are going to be advanced in terms of dealing with that. Chapter 4 itself, Chair, it only deals with transformation and the extent of which the state have to play a role. Because, Chair, if you look in terms of, you know, the current situation, like, for example, the state in many instances is the custodian of those, some of the, you know, of the state assets. So as and when we dispose, public works, for example, as and when they learn and they dispose, they need actually to give an access to those particular stock to black estate agents to make sure that they advance them to be at the same level as REMAX, you know, as, you know, other, you know, well-known, you know, estate agent. So we need to make sure to say that how do you advance black estate agent, and more especially, Chair, you'll hear that in the in engagement, there are most of the estate agents that are there which are black, they cry about the access to stock. Because in most instances in the residential space, they don't have, because it's a choice of a seller, you know, to use a particular estate agent. But we need also to drive that the state itself must also assist in making sure to say that as and when they rent out, they lease out, as and when actually they are selling or disposing of all those assets, they use the black estate agent. We are not only referring to the state in a sense of, you know, only departments, but also, you know, state agencies, you know, we talk about entities and so forth, you know, SANRAL and all those other ones that owns lands, piece of land. As and when they sell those particular piece of land, we urge them in terms of the legislation for them to make use of the black estate agent so that at least we can up them and also assist them to be at a level that they can advance and assist others as well. For them, they could be at the level of REMAX, you know, of Pem Golding and so forth. We need, you know, Honorable Chair, you know, to really actually, you know, have the assistance of the state in that particular regard. So that chapter, Chairperson, it only deals with the mechanism of the intervention by the state and the individuals, including the sector itself. Further than that, Chair, on that particular chapter, we are talking about the issue that relating to the establishment of the transformation fund. The fund itself, even the sector itself, outside and inside, they must fund, you know, the transformation of the industry. That as and when we are bringing in young people, because as and, you know, at the moment, Chair, you may be aware that, you know, the entity and the department as well, they are trying, you know, to advance and bring in the young people by, you know, the One Learner, One Estate Agency, you know, Youth Brigade program. But however, Chair, it's a question of making sure that how do we assist and also making sure that as an entity itself, we've got a fund that is going to drive transformation without being dependent, you know, on certain individuals and for, you know, for you, you know, for assistance. Because at the moment, we are trying, let me say, to reach out to them. It's voluntarily for them actually to assist in terms of transformation. But the legislation itself is going to compel them to say that as and when you are selling, and if we have a particular threshold, you must contribute to the fund. And the fund will assist many of the people, and in particular in all those remote areas and so forth, so that they can be exposed to this particular sector. Because there is money there, Chair. I can assure you to say that if an estate agent, although it's a commission-based, but if you sell a property, if a young person sell a property, become an estate agent, sell a property for about 4 million or 5 million, the commission there actually, you know, it makes a huge difference. So it will make a huge difference to them. And it also it will assist them actually, you know, to make sure that how do you actively participate and own their own estate, you know, real estate agents. That's about chapter 4, Chairperson, because the most important part of it is about that drive for transformation. The bill further stipulates the procurement, the procuring property-related goods and services of all organs of the state, like I've indicated, should utilize the services of the previous disadvantaged estate agent. Chairperson, the bill further provides for the exemption in respect of the accounting records and the trust funds. You know, other estate agents, Chair, are crying about the issue that relates to the trust funds, that it is costly to keep the trust account. You know, sometimes they don't even have an opportunity even to sell for a period of time because, you know, if you go to, you know, the other markets, like, for example, in the township and so forth, you don't have that particular kind of a active, you know, market, you know, activity there, as opposed, you know, to the suburbs and so forth. But the trend is that, Chair, I think to inform all those honourable members that if you find that also in those, you know, suburb areas, and more especially in the gated villages, you'll find that there is an element of discrimination there that, for example, the homeowners association, in certain instances, they'll set up the rules to say that they'll need to accredit who's supposed to be an estate agent in that particular, you know, estate. So you must remember that in that particular estate, for example, you find that there is of opportunity to do business. So they will call, for example, to say that an estate agent must pay, you know, a once-off fee, you know, of about 30,000. You may find that most of the black estate agents, they don't have that. So as a result, they won't be participating like for example in Waterfall, for example, and you'll find that most of the people that reside in Waterfall, you know, are most predominantly actually, you know, the middle class, you know, the black people that got their particular power. So you may find that they are being serviced by what, you know, estate agents in the main. So you must understand that those are the things that we want to try, you know, to transform and make sure to say that there is an access in that particular space, notwithstanding the fact of the rules, you know, that we are in the gated villages, the homeowners association, the race, of course, actually, you know, all those body corporates. So those particular instances, we want actually to regulate them through this particular process and give our people as well, as and when they are selling those particular, you know, instances, an opportunity for them to sell. Because that's where the market is. Like, if the houses they not afford, for example, they are not less than about 3 million. And the commission there is very encouraging. So we need to make sure to say that there is an access actually to the previous disadvantage. Slide number 9, chapter 5 of the bill provides for the compliance, you know, Honorable Chair, including enforcement measures. It further provides for the appointment powers and duties of inspectors to ensure compliance and also to provide for the procedure and logic of complaints and non-compliance. Chair, we have indicated the fact that it is quite important in the sense that if you have suffered any pecuniary loss, you need actually not to report that estate agent. There is a recourse for consumers out there. As and when you become, you know, the client of an estate agent, you need actually not to go and get your recourse, either from the estate agent, because there is what we call the fidelity fund. The fidelity fund is a fund that is paid by active estate agent. It's meant for you, if you have suffered any loss, you can go to the fund and claim to say that I've used this estate agent, and as a result, my house is leaking, or all these sort of defects were not even disclosed to me. So this is the proof of expenditure, and therefore, you know, the process of that particular process will unfold and will be reimbursed as such. So, Chair, the same chapter also deals with the inspectors and the power of search, and also to seize documentation on property practitioners when in non-compliance with the Act. They empower the issue of compliance notices and non-compliance of persons to comply with specific times. It also provides for compliance notices by the authority and also the fines that need actually to be paid as a result thereof. Chapter 5, Honorable Chair, also deals with the issue of mediation, adjudication, and of appeal committees, if you have referred the matter to them, if you have suffered any pecuniary loss. Slide 10, Chair, it talks also about Chapter 6. Chapter 6 of the bill provides for the funds of the authority and financial year of the authority. Yes, Chair, it provides for that particular fund. Chapter 7, Chair, provides for the continuation of the Estate Agency Fidelity Fund under the new name Property Practitioners Fidelity Fund. That's the fund that I've referred to, Chairperson, to say it's a fund that is reserved, you know, for those who have suffered any pecuniary loss as a result of using an estate agent, and as a result, you need actually not to claim. You can claim from the fund. So people need to know to say that if you have suffered any, you know, loss when you use the estate agent to rent or to rent out your house or to sell or to do any other thing, they need to go to that particular fund actually not to claim for those particular loss, and for them actually not to keep those particular receipts that they have suffered that loss. So because for over the period of time, I can tell you, Chair, that from 1976, there has not been any claim, you know, a serious claim against the fund. I can tell you it's not because of that. It's because of people who have not been exposed, you know, to know exactly that you can claim against the fund. So there is, of course, that opportunity for you to do that. It further provides, Chair, for the management and control of the validity fund, regulate the investment of monies and payment of funds of the validity fund. Chapter 8, Honorable Chair, regulate the application of the fund certificates and prohibits rendering of services without the validity fund certificate. Because all the estate agents that will be doing, that will be licensed, they must have the validity fund certificate that will license the mechanism for them to operate. It's quite important as well in our process of educating our communities that they need, as and when they use an estate agent, you must ask for that estate agent, where's your license, so that they can show you the license actually that has been issued by the EAB. So it is important because it will cover you, it will protect you as well, as and when you are dealing with that estate agent. Chair, on slide 11, chapter 9 of the bill regulate the conduct and the behavior of the property practitioners through the code of conduct, sanctionable conduct, prohibiting of undesirable practice, and measures and control and supervision of candidate property practitioners. The code of conduct is very important, Chair, that each and every professional sector, you need to have the code of conduct that regulates those particular individuals. If you want to become an estate agent, you must adhere and subject yourself to this particular code of conduct that will be said that you need to, you know, to adhere to. Chairperson, also the Chapter 9, it also regulates the franchise of the industry. Chapter 10, Chairperson, also provides for the regulate the consumer protection and provide for the mandatory disclosure, language of agreements, and consumer education and information. It is also a mandatory chair in terms of the Act to say we need as an entity as well like to continue actually to advance consumer protection and also to make sure that there is utmost actually no consumer protection and consumer education, you know, to all the sectors of our society, irrespective actually of the area where they reside, both in rural areas and any other areas. Because if you find as well, Chairperson, that if you go to rural areas, there is of course selling of farms there, there is also the transactions that are happening there. You'll find yourself and ask yourself question, who's facilitating those transactions? Both in the commercial space and the residential space. It's quite important to make sure to say that how do we capacitate and give an exposure to those particular individuals there to make sure that they become and target those particular areas so that they can, of course, participate in that space. Slide number 12, Chairperson, deals with Chapter 11 of the bill, which deals primarily with the general matters, including making of the regulations under this particular piece of legislation by the Minister. It also provides for penalties. It provides also for delegation of powers by the Minister. It provides for legal proceedings against the authority, the use of the name of the authority, and transitional provisions, repeal, and the short title of the Act, Honourable Chair. Thank you very much, Chairperson, as I rest. Thanks.
No, thank you for the presentation and the clarity you kept on giving to us with regards to how is this bill going to affect the industry and invite more role players to participate in it, but also safeguard the consumers against exploitation and the provision also of a fund where people can go to claim, because they've got cases of that are very sad of people that have got property where the valuation did not actually give the true picture of what the property is like. And as time goes on, there are cracks, it is in a wet zone, and so on and so on. But let us allow honored members to make their comments and also probe the presentation. Honourable Member, please do introduce yourself. I did not get to know your formal name.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. DM. My name is Busisiwe Ndlangisa Makaula, the Chairperson for Human Settlement in the Eastern Cape.
Thank you.
Chair, I just want to add my voice in appreciating the presentation. To me, it is clear, and I'm excited with the issue of the consumer education. That's the actual problems we always interface with. Mm. We'll find that people are not aware, and it's something that we always fight with the department about this consumer education, because it is important to know as to what is entailed to them in the houses that they are there. So I'm so excited about this consumer education that it's going to be intensified so that everybody would understand where he stands or she stands. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable members, any comment? Any question? Honourable Mshun?
Thanks very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister and your team, the officials of Parliament and Legislature. My first question, Honourable Chair, DM, I think is a concern. Your team, if I was looking, your team is only men here. There's no women. I don't know what's the problem about that 50-50. We need to fight. We're here because of this thing. And my first question, Honourable Chairperson, I just want to check the requirement for practitioners to have a trust fund. How practical is going to be in practice? That is my first question, Honourable Chair. Two, the cost associated with audited process. I just want to check is affordable. I think, Chair, I've got only that two questions and concern for the DM. when we are coming back, I want to see a beautiful woman in front of us.
The room pump is for what?
Thank you, Chair, and compliments to everybody that's here. Minister, I'm happy that the bill is going to concentrate on the transformation and dealing with the demographic of South African citizens. And I want you, the presenter, to unpack, Mr. Ngwenya, to unpack, because on the object of the bill, you say the bill has to create alignment and synergy on PAJA and CPA, and I want you to unpack how that's affected. And on the transformation part, you have I don't know which page you have stipulated that, or you have mentioned that the transformation has to concentrate on certain races. I want to know the unpacking. Is that enough? Is that races mentioned there are the only ones, and the others that are left out, what about them? Because South African legislation has to be inclusive. Not anybody can be left out. I'm under that impression. I want you to confirm that. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Honourable
Member. Okay, no, thank you. From my side, yes, I just want to echo the sentiments of the Honourable Members is to say that this is really a new beginning in the property industry. And it is going to advantage those that have been left out of the benefits of this industry. Nonetheless, my worry is, I don't know if DM we've done our homework in terms of ensuring that our children actually tap into this industry. I think we can conduct research in various universities, and you'll find that very few black students are actually studying this field. And if we don't take care of that, then we are not going to tap into those trillions that the DGG is speaking about. We need to do that homework in terms of ensuring that we've got people who are participating and they are professional in the industry. And I like the comments also by the presenter where he says that it is the duty also of government to ensure that those that are becoming players are supported, even in spaces that require rent. You go to our towns, our cities, you'll find that spaces that are rented by government departments belong to certain specific racial groups other than blacks. And that is not empowerment. There could be space in the townships where we could rent some space as government departments, but we don't do that. We tend to settle or to prefer areas in town, and unfortunately those that were disadvantaged are not in town. They are in townships or in rural areas. Maybe that's another issue that we need to look into. The recourse and the fund that is going to be put aside for people to claim in case they were shortchanged, DM. But unfortunately, because the bill is going to be passed now into an act, those that have suffered such exploitation before, are they going to be assisted by the fund? Because we know people that bought houses in wetlands and they were not informed, in flood zones, and they did not know. Houses where there are waterfalls and are falling into the houses. I'm from a meeting in an area where people are complaining, say they're leaving the area and so on because we are not taking care of the situation. Those are the issues here, consumer education, that we need to strengthen and intensify. But are they going to have a benefit of a claim?
And registered agents, property agents. Yeah, there are people that are coming up into this field, but you find that they are not registered. They are taking chances. I think also it would be important to strengthen our consumer education as not to get into such traps. A person will write in the paper, please, if you want to buy this property, contact so and so. You contact so and so. Let us meet at a point. You meet the person, and you find that this person is not a registered asset agent. So there is that exploitation, and we need to be very careful and teach our people not to be taken for granted. The pricing of property. It is easy to give value to a house if you are a trained person to give value to a property. But the price of vacant land. A person bought the piece of land from maybe, let me cite an example, from the municipality for, say, 200,000 rand. And in 10 they sell it for 1.2 million. After a period of only 3 years after purchase. How do we deal with those situations of that kind of exploitation? I don't know if the bill can be able to go as far as that, because now it is person-to-person kind of negotiation, but there is also exploitation in that regard. How do you give value to a vacant piece of land? Thank you. Those would be my questions.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think the important thing is, I think, you know, in relation to the transformation, it encompasses the entire issue, because the previous, the current Act is very sector industry biased. And I think I think it's important to note that given our constitutional imperatives, particularly in relation to the rights of citizens, you know, there is this. Sometimes we don't realize, but when we are all better educated, when we are all better informed, and when we are all better advised, it makes things a lot more easier and better. And I think the emphasis, and I think the Kwesi addressed the issue. That's why there's an issue around the question of a transformation fund. That is specifically, and the dynamics of that will be something that DM and Minister, as part of the regulations, will be able to, because the issue is that we cannot allow, I mean, the point is, if we want to do these things and we want to create this equality in relation to transaction and how we do business, that's an issue that will be. So that's it. Chair, and then the issue around the question of the Fidelity Fund, and I think the importance about the Fidelity Fund is also the inability for consumers and those that have purchased to actually make claims where there have been this issue around the question of poor behavior and that's an emphasis and that's kept in there. The last point, which I think I want to address, Chair, is the issue around the question of the unregistered agents. I mean, I think the issue we need to ask is that why is there the practice of, you know, of unregistered agents? Is because sometimes we've created barriers, and some of those barriers, I think, members raised the issue around the question of the high costs of compliance, and that's an issue that we must address. That is all very well having all the legislation and regulations, but if there's a huge cost, it also then prevents communities and people from participating in that. So it's an issue that we've said must be dealt with. Chair, yeah. With your permission.
Perhaps let me start by, thanks, DDG. Let me start directly on the issue of consumer education. The chairperson from the Eastern Cape Human Settlement, I agree with you that consumer education needs to be increased. In fact, that is why, in terms of this bill, we want
to be part of the legislation, so that practitioners in this area are forced to do consumer education. The reason being that a house is an asset, but the house is only an asset if the owner understands that. Because while you are in that house, you must maintain it, beautify it, increase the value of the property. So hence the issue of consumer education, which is very, very critical on all rounds. That consumer education chairperson is also equally important for new entrants within the practitioner environment. For example, we have what is called one estate agency learner, in terms of one estate agency, one learner, where we wanted young people, young entrants into the industry. And that consumer education will also train young people about the importance of the issue of estate agency, selling of houses. So it's very, very important, because you want them at the end of the day, because they are the custodian of the future. So if the young people are not involved, the industry is not going to grow in the manner that we want it to grow. The other issue, the absence of one of the members of the team who is a lady. It's not, it's a default. But it should not be used. You must ask all the question all the time. Because even if the person, like right now, she's on leave, even if the person is on leave, there are other ladies in the department who are equally senior, who are equally important. They can take that role in her absence. So we don't take that lightly. But thanks for putting that to us. Transformation should be inclusive, and entry into the industry should be inclusive on all racial groups of South Africa. Mm-hmm. That's why we are saying all demographics are equally important. For us, this legislation is transformative in nature. Mm-hmm. It's inclusive of all in all rounds. Mm-hmm. Chairperson, one of the things that I thought it was important that we need to take into account are the agencies which sell houses which are not in well-located areas. Mm-hmm. Wetlands, dolomitic land, land that is places at the river banks, mm-hmm. and so forth. Definitely people, they definitely need recourse in situations where they find that they were shortchanged by the agencies. That is why the Fidelity Fund is critical. It's for exactly a situation whereby, because people, when they buy houses, they're desperate. So sometimes you buy houses without thinking, and in that instance, it definitely we need to ensure that there is a recourse. Lastly, value of the piece of land, Chairperson. Do you know that a piece of land is very, very important? Just to have that piece of land on its own, depending where the land is. One of the things that I think is about time that we need to do is to turn around the houses in the township. They can't remain dormitories. People are beautifying their houses there. They're making everything that they go to a particular level. The property sector must take into account and enter and remove the redlining of the townships. Then those houses will equally have value, like all other houses. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And most of the questions have been clearly answered, actually, by the DM. And I'll confine myself into two important questions that honourable member have raised. The first issue is in regard to the issue of the trust fund or the trust account. It is quite important. It's a very important question that we have raised, because one of the issues of the cost of keeping the trust account is one of the issues that we have identified as being one of the barriers to entry. So it is important to say that in this particular piece of legislation, we have made an exemption, you know, to those who have, you know, who wish they could not to apply, you know, to be exempted from holding a trust account. Because the trust account, Chairperson, if you don't keep a trust account, there is a cost associated with that. So it is important to say that if you are a previous disadvantaged individual, you have not made a business over the period of time. Many of them are unregistered. Sometimes they fall out of the business because they can't keep with the trust account. So it is quite important that we have identified that we need to address this particular elephant in the room was the trust account. So we have made a provision in here to say, look, we'll outline that there is an exemption, and we'll prescribe in the regulation the instances that a person has to apply for exemption for, you know, for you to be exempted. Similar issue issue that we have raised as well, which is also critical, is associated with the trust fund, is the issue of the audited financial, you know, statement. Remember, many of them also fall out of the, you know, out of the cracks because of what we request in terms of the current piece of legislation regime. We request them to submit the audited financial statement. And remember, for them to submit the audited financial statement, it's very costly. They must go to an auditor. They have been charged about 10,000, 15,000. So sometimes they fall out of, you know, out of the picture because of the reason of the cost associated with the compliance. So it's an issue also that we have dealt with. So that as opposed to them submitting their financial statement, we'll also request them to submit only their financial statement, you know, as and when is required, without being audited. And as a result of those particular transformational initiatives, then we'll set aside auditors that will also assist them in terms of submitting that. So those are the critical issues that we have raised, which were very critical and so we have made provisions for them. The trust account for the exemption and also for the submission of the audited financial statement in the bill as well. So those are the critical issues that they have raised. The other issue that all the members have raised with regards to the, you know, issue of the alignment of the piece of legislation with PAJA and Consumer Protection Act. Remember, honourable members, is that in here I've indicated so that we are dealing with the 1976 piece of legislation, which was never repealed. We are repealing for the very first time. And over the period of time, we have had progressive democratic, you know, legislation being developed. We've got the Constitution, we've got the PAJA, Promotion of Access, you know, to Information, the Promotion of, you know, of Administrative Justice Act, which provide a prescribed certain requirement to say that as an administrative decision-making process, you need to give reasons for your administrative decisions. And you are compelled to give those particular reasons to the person that requires them. So this particular act is behind, you know, in line with those particular pieces of legislation. You go to Consumer Protection Act. It's the overall IKIN legislation that deals with the consumer protection. So this legislation is of 1976. It's not aligned to that piece of legislation. So what we're trying to do now, we're trying to make sure that this legislation is aligned to all the pieces of legislation which have been transformative, that has been developed over by the democratic government over the period of time from since 1976. That is exactly what we're trying to do, honorable member. But on the issue of the, you know, inclusivity of transformation, honorable, you know, DM have dealt with it very comprehensively. Thank you.
I did not get your answer. I've got two other issues that I wanted to raise. The property sector research center issue, if you can explain that one and where it is going to be positioned and so on in relation to provinces. The other issue is I don't know whether this piece of legislation will also protect exploitation of the consumer insofar as the value of property is concerned.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue that relating to the research center, it is a very critical issue that you have raised, Honorable Chair. I think it was also advanced very strongly by the academics. You know, the academics have raised this, but the especially from the Eastern Cape, for example. You know, the professors from, you know, Nelson Mandela University and Walter Sisulu, they have advanced that particular issue to say it is quite important to place the institution of higher learning in the center, you know, of transformation, because in there is knowledge, there is an access of young people as well, to say that if they assist us in terms of bringing in the research, in terms of the process of transformation, they will monitor the exercise of the transformation, to which extent are we making progress or are we not making progress. As and when we're implementing this new piece of legislation, they need to be monitoring us using various instruments and mechanisms, you know, from institutions of higher learning, you know, to research and using young people to research, you know, in terms of the market. Because challenge is critical as well, which is critical, which is very important. We should not only concentrate, you know, on the residential space of things, because there is business that is happening, huge number of business that is happening on a commercial space and an industrial space, which, you know, the complexes, the shopping centers and all those other things, there is active participation there, but there is almost small percentage of black estates that are participating there. So you need to have that knowledge research center that is going to be the knowledge repository for the department and for each and every member of the society in a particular province, you know, for them to have an access to all those particular, you know, research, you know, papers and knowledge that is there. So that if you want, for example, the committee want to, you know, evaluate us, to say, look, we want to evaluate the application and implementation of this legislation after it's been passed. You don't need to come to us for it. But what you can do, you can measure us by obtaining that information from those knowledge research centers, from various institutions in various provinces, so that you can do the check and balance. When you come here and say about, no, that is not what the knowledge research center tells us. That's not what the Nelson Mandela University of Western University is telling us. That's not what University of Western Cape is telling us. So those particular who want to give them access to that particular space, for them to assist us, Chair. Thank you very much.
We certainly are not going to be able to pass the minutes. We don't have quorum. We can't pass the annual report, we don't have quorum. But at least let us look at the program of the first term. What is the program? Okay.
Honored members, in front of us that we need to look into. Today is the 29th of January. We have had the briefing by the Department of Human Settlements. And then on the 5th of February, it's the negotiating mandate on the National Public Health Institute of South Africa. I remember we were dealing with it before we closed. And then next week also is the briefing at the level of provinces. I know that it will be Eastern Cape and KZN on this particular bill that we're dealing with today. Other provinces will be doing it at different dates. No, it's the 5th. So those of us that will be affected then will not make it, but we'll make arrangements to ensure that the meetings that are sitting next week still continue, even though some of the members may be going out to the provinces to deal with the bill. But we know exactly which provinces are affected on any given day. And then on the 7th of February is the State of the Nation address by the President. 12th is the briefing by the Department of Home Affairs on civil union amendments. It is a Section 75 bill, that one. It doesn't go to the provinces. And then during February again, or on that same date, you must say, isn't it? Public hearings in the provinces on the property practitioners bill that we're dealing with today even. And then on the fourth week, which is Tuesday the 19th, public hearings are still running over the period of those 2 weeks. And then there is going to be a budget speech by the Minister of Finance on Wednesday, the 28th of February. And then on the 26th of February, negotiating mandates on the bill that we're working on today. The provinces will have submitted their negotiating mandates and will be working on them on the 26th. And then from the 5th to the 8th March is committee oversight. We had decided, you remember, on our members, to go to the Western Cape / Gauteng. KAT is not here, we still have to finalize that, but I remember the first preference was Western Cape because they've not been here. So we'll, but I'm saying here, the reason why I'm saying it so quick is that it is saying / Gauteng.
So now, I'm not sure what's going to be happening. And then Tuesday the 12th, finalization of this property practitioners bill, and the consideration also and finalization of the civil union amendment bill. And then Tuesday the 19th, briefing by the Department of Health on the strat plan and their budget vote, or the beginning of the budget vote. In March, consideration, adoption of a committee minutes, and then consideration and adoption of the committee's legacy report. And then on the 26th of March, briefing by the Department of Home Affairs on the strat plan and their budget votes. I suppose that that will be the end of the first quarter. And what happens thereafter, we shall be informed. So that is the program of this quarter. I seek a mover, and Honorable Equid is moving, a seconder, Honorable Impabos Bobat. Thank you very much, Honorable. With regards to with regards to the annual report, I would suggest Honorable members that we do it when the chairperson is here. It will be proper for us to do that. She might have an opportunity to raise some of the issues that she wishes to raise and correct. No, thank you very much. The meeting is well attended. But there is this issue that the chief of the committee is raising. Honorable Gina has lost a husband. He is the co-chairperson at the National Assembly. We have worked with her and her committee from time to time. I don't know what the whip wishes to suggest in that regard.
I don't know, but I think as a committee, everything is given that you have worked with her very well up to where we are. Is it not possible for the committee to decide on two members?
What is the feeling of the other member?
To have maybe two people just to go and present the committee. Just as easy, as we normally do as a person, we actually listen to the person when they are prior to the funeral. The funeral is open, anybody can go there, but if it's a long relation, yeah, it's just an exception. If we so wish to actually pay a visit prior, those people can actually in the field.
I think the reason of obviously the committee funds cannot be utilized for that, it should be all the members entitled.
I think